In the heart of Rome, the Lateran Basilica was filled with a restless hush. Clergy lined the walls, their faces tight with unease, their whispers barely audible over the crackle of the torches. In the centre of the room stood Pope Stephen VI, his voice rising with a righteous fervour. He jabbed a finger towards the accused, who sat stiffly before him. "When you, Your Holiness, were Bishop of Porto," Stephen thundered, "why did you usurp the universal Roman See in such spirit of ambition?" The crowd shifted uncomfortably. They had gathered for many trials in this sacred hall, but this one was quite unlike anything they had witnessed before. Stephen paced as he hurled accusations. Crimes against the church, violations of holy law, fraud, betrayal, perjury. Yet throughout, the accused remained still. A deacon of the church, standing at the accused's side, spoke softly in his defence. His words were calm and carefully chosen, but they did little to refute any of these accusations. Heads turned between the furious Pope and the silent figure upon the throne, doubt clouding every face. Stephen's voice grew louder, cracking with emotion. "Do you deny your crimes? Speak, defend yourself." He stared deep into the cold, vacant eyes of the accused. Then, after a heartbeat, the head of the man on the throne slumped to one side and promptly rolled onto the floor. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Cloak and Dagger podcast, the podcast where we tell bizarre stories of history. My name is Patrick Courtney and I'm joined as ever by my co-host Will. Will, welcome to 2025.
Hey, we made it.
This
is going to be the year. No, I hate saying that these times. It's not worth it. Let's just get into this year.
It's going to be fine. It's going to be a
swimming.
Fine year.
Yeah,
it's going to be an okay year. Exactly. Hopefully no new wars.
Oh, God, don't even jinx it. You're putting it out into the ether. No, it's great to be into 2025, and it's great to have you listeners along with us for the ride. Yeah, it's been a really hectic time in January so far for the Cloak and Dagger podcast. So many different edits and posts that we're doing at the moment, and our recording schedule has got a little bit stressful.
Yes, hopefully this is coming out on time.
Oh, I better hope so.
Probably. I mean, you'll know if it isn't, but if it isn't, don't blame us. It's a complicated year. But yeah, we're so excited to start this year again. We're so excited to dive into 12 more stories of history. It's 12 episodes.
That'll be.
Plus maybe some bonus episodes scattered throughout.
Definitely. We've got loads of bonus episodes coming.
We may have already had one if it's come out already.
Yeah, but I'm thinking we've got at least three I can think of that will be out there alongside the regular stuff.
I don't know what those are, so I'm excited for those as well.
Well, there you go. No, yeah, it should be good.
If you're new to this podcast, we tell weird and wonderful stories of history and try and give you as much context to all of the... We were just having this conversation about YouTube being filled with all these shorts telling you weird stories of history, but in 20 seconds and giving you no context. And we've decided that our focus is giving all the context and all the weird and wonderful politics that go around these events.
That is definitely like the bit that we like to focus on more than the story, as you would know if you're a long-term listener. And if you are new, welcome to the family.
Yes.
It's great to have you along.
We also have an Instagram account at Cloak and Dagger Podcast where we put extra content. We put images that are associated with the episode. Maybe don't look straight away, but if you are listening to this episode, there is a really great painting that goes along with this episode that will probably be the first one I'll put on Instagram. Maybe don't look straight away because it might give it away, but it's definitely worth a look. And we have extra content and some sneak peeks as well on there as well. Also, if you like the podcast, if you're new or if you're old and you've been enjoying the podcast for a while, please rate and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps out the show. We love hearing your feedback, even if it's negative.
Yeah, honestly, we just like hearing from you. It's such an active community that we have with this show, and I love it. And there's like over 1,000 of you out there, and we'd love to hear your thoughts and your feelings about the show. And yeah, genuinely, even if you just put the rating, just the star rating, that actually really boosts us in just reaching other people. So that would really help the show out. It'll take you less than a minute to do. So thank you in advance for that.
Yes. Should we get started?
Let's get into it.
So, Will, how much do you know about the papacy in the 9th century? You always ask me questions about things that I never know the answers. I'm asking you a really complicated one.
The papacy in the 9th century.
Yes.
Oh my God. Okay. Not.
You could probably guess a name, one of the names of the popes, because they always use the same bloody names.
But there was one.
I did say Stephen. Stephen. So you could guess
Stephen
that
one. Stephen VI was on the.
Yeah, thing. Yeah, he was there. Well done.
But I was going to say that 9th century, I think, is Charlemagne. Mm. He's around
post Charlemagne. Well, a little bit post Charlemagne, but yeah, a huge part of papacy and the kind of Europe at the time is the Carolingian Empire.
Yeah.
I always get that word wrong. Carolingian Empire.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
Apparently is just like the Charles Empire.
Yeah, Carolingian means the Charlesian.
It's just based off their name, which is funny, and I wish it was just called the Charlesian Empire.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, so it depends what time, but if Charlemagne's dead, the Carolingian Empire splits into three.
Oh yeah, they have this quite bizarre quickly. System of like inheritance. You have to, I mean, it's quite nice, I suppose, but you have to divide everything between your sons.
Yeah.
So great big empire that Charlemagne sets up and then immediately has to split it into three with his three sons. So
100%.
Kind of pointless.
Yeah. And actually, if you think about that, that's the foundation of France is mm-hmm. one of them. And Germany is the other one.
Yes.
And in between, I've literally just finished reading a book about this. This is the lost region known as Lotharingia.
Ooh, which became, that sounds like Tolkien-esque, Lotharingia.
Yeah, and it means the land of Lothar.
Oh.
So Lotharingia. And he was one of the sons.
Yes.
And basically, France and Germany just start to squish the middle territory. And then that eventually becomes, it's where sort of Luxembourg is and the Netherlands and Belgium.
This makes so much sense because I've got I had to bring up because, okay, so Carolingian dynasty and empire, super complicated in terms of who's ruling what, who's connected to whatever. Like I thought War of the Roses was complicated.
Oh,
this
no.
is just insane because there's a bunch of different crowns people have. But I was looking at the family tree because it has Charlemagne and then it goes on to Louis the Pious. And then he has a series of sons. And that's like one of the other points it starts really splitting apart. And one of them was Lothar the First, king of Middle Francia. And I was like, where? What's Middle Francia? Because West Francia becomes France.
Yeah.
And then East Francia is kind of Bavaria and kind of Germany.
Yeah.
Like that's the splitting of it. And I was like,
but
this place doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So this is a lost, and they just slowly took over.
Yeah, and if you think about the map today, it's where Luxembourg, Belgium, Netherlands,
right.
and sort of Switzerland are. It's all along where basically the World War One trenches were.
Oh,
yeah.
Weird.
I know. And this book, I just read this book by a man called Simon Winder called Lotharingia, and it was one of the densest books I've ever read, but I cannot not finish a book, so it's taken me 3 months to read one book, but I actually happen to know quite a lot about Lotharingia now.
Perfect.
But please don't ask me any more questions about it.
Well, this doesn't take place in Lotharingia, wherever the hell that is.
Okay.
But so today's episode is focused on the papacy and on this bizarre time for the papacy where popes were dropping like flies. Like normally you consider a pope for lasting a decade, a couple decades, like quite a long time. They're quite established. And throughout, I think, most of history, they're pretty good. Other than quite early on where they kept being martyred because they kept being murdered. And actually maybe that's a sweeping statement. Actually, that isn't really the case. I guess when you think about modern popes, they last for a long time.
They do, although even modern-ish popes, like Pope Pius IX, I think it was the guy who didn't want Italy to become a nation because he didn't want to give up the papal states.
Really?
And that was only in the 1800s.
Oh.
So actually, you've had some... The popes do, like kings, it depends on the personality. It's very much personality type. And actually, I was just thinking about the only other thing I know about the papacy pre-Crusade is they weren't respected. Very much until Christian kingship became more established.
Yeah, it feels like they're a bit more of a rubber stamp in certain regards. Like if you are Christian, you respect them, but I guess Europe isn't as knit, it's a bit more sporadic. And so Rome is just this far off person. And really the papacy and the Pope is very impacted by regional politics. So it's I think I'm right here, but yeah, it's Charlemagne who essentially bequeathes the papal states and makes that like this whole area that the Pope controls. And they both kind of like help each other out, and then he gets named Holy Roman Emperor, and like it's all a bit messed up and all a bit kind of looking after each other.
So this is the thing. Rome is in a very awkward phase because the Roman Empire, air quotes, has moved to Constantinople.
Yes.
So that is where Rome, sort of the sort of the gold, the golden fairy dust of Rome, has gone east.
Yeah, and then it's almost like the papacy and the Pope is trying to pretend it's still with them.
Exactly. And how do you do that? You need to get more legitimacy. So if you get the biggest guy with the biggest sword on your side,
yes,
and that guy needs the legitimacy to warrant why he has the biggest sword, they help each other. They're mutually. They're trying to boost each other's signal, boost their own sort of
exactly
yeah.
And we're already going off topic, but actually, because an extra bit is, it also helped at the time when they were doing this, the current emperor of the Byzantines was a woman, and they did not want a woman being in charge of the Roman Empire, so they kind of, so it's Pope Leo the, I haven't written down something, but third.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's early. Pope Leo III just decides he spends his Christmas day crowning Charlemagne the new Holy Roman Emperor.
Ah.
And effectively says, okay, you're the new... I think he even names him Augustus. Like, he gives him that title. Oh, that might be a bit later. But you know, they kind of really want to reimagine what the Roman Empire is, even though the Roman Empire very much just went to Constantinople.
100%. Yeah.
But so... long story short, it's a complicated time for the papacy. In fact, they have so many people like churning through, and they're the kind of the sacrosanct nature of the Holy See and the seat of the Pope is kind of a bit up in the air, because people are, they're being swapped out all the time. There's a lot of corruption, and they're having to deal with a lot that's going on. So they've got the Carolingians to the north and all of this, and because the Pope is the one who crowns Charlemagne as the Holy Roman Emperor, they kind of have to be the ones that do it every time. So whenever you're a new pope, you're immediately being eyed by all of these rivals to the Holy Roman Empire throne, going, well, I want to be that, but I need the Pope to crown me. So it's a tough job. Like, it's not just influence from afar. You are directly involved in who runs this huge empire to your north. You've also got the Abbasid Caliphate to the south, who are also starting to make inroads. And, you know, this is the kind of... we're not quite at Crusades times, but this is the beginnings of that and the beginning between the rivalry. So it's a complicated time to be Pope.
Yeah.
But for our story, we're going to look at a man in particular who will become Pope. But we'll look at him from the beginning of his life, or roughly the beginning of his life, because we don't actually know a huge amount about him. But it's a fella called Formosus.
Formosus.
Interesting name, actually. I couldn't really see much about, like, talking about the name, but I guess it's vaguely Latin.
I'm guessing he's Italian.
He is Italian. So Formosus is likely grew up either in Rome or very close to Rome, very much within the Roman province, and was able to succeed and maneuver himself well enough to eventually become a cardinal bishop of the Porta Santa Rufina diocese, which is a diocese, I think, within Rome, or at least very close to Rome, so within Rome's remit. So quite an important job.
Absolutely. Already a cardinal. He must be from, I'm pretty sure, in these times, Rome's families, leading families, were the pool of people who became cardinals.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. There's a huge amount of factionalism within Rome. That's really what's running everything. And it's kind of why I think a lot of people see this time as a dodgy time for the papacy, because it's kind of got very little to do with faith and Christianity, and it's just kind of families swapping power and attacking each other. It's that kind of feel, which doesn't feel like a good head of a church.
No, fair enough.
Even though that's probably what most head of churches actually do. But, you know, it's not the right imagery.
It's a bit brazen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So Bishop Formosus, as he is at the moment, so he does a very good job, and actually he is sent overseas to Bulgaria to become the papal legate, which is essentially like the ambassador for the papacy. And he's kind of tasked with overseeing the conversion of Bulgaria to Christianity.
That is a hard job.
Yeah, it sounds like they were already on their way. It seems like the king was very receptive, so I imagine the king and the aristocracy were already Christian, and it's just about driving out pagans and older traditions, that kind of thing.
Okay, interesting.
And he's very successful at this. In fact, the king is a big fan of his. In fact, he does such a good job. He supposedly, and there's a lot of supposedly in this story, because the papacy doesn't really keep records that make them look bad. And a lot of this time period makes them look bad.
Sure.
So I think some of this is a bit more hearsay. But supposedly, Formosus does such a good job, he actually requests to become the Archbishop of Bulgaria, which will be a huge step up for him. But he's denied, because he is already a bishop of a diocese in Rome. And you are not allowed to hold two positions like that, specifically to prevent bishops from creating their own little fiefdoms and kind of
possibly becoming a splinter off from the church.
Interesting.
So I think you could maybe switch.
I was going
to
say.
But this would mean, I think he would need permission to do that. He would need a reasonable, and you know, he might not be particularly popular with the Pope at the time. It's quite complicated. The popes are changing so often, it's hard to keep track of which Pope is in power at the time.
Sure.
But because there's so much factionalism, I think there's a lot of rivalry between the popes. So if you're out of favour with the Pope at the time, they won't allow you to just ditch one diocese and go pick up another one.
Okay, interesting.
So it's an interesting position to be in. But he is quite a successful and quite a charismatic guy who he's able to win over the Bulgarians, kind of get a lot of prestige, get a lot of influence. However, like many other cardinals probably at the time, Formosus was also very interested in the politics / the rulership of the Holy Roman Empire. Okay. As I say, this is a huge part of this part of Europe, and the papacy's involvement in the Holy Roman Empire is very important. So they all want to put their own two cents into it.
Of course.
So we're in 875 at the moment. Formosus is still a bishop. And in 875, Louis II... God, it's weird to see Louis with such a low number, isn't it? Yeah. Louis II. Does that continue? So when it becomes Louis XVI, it must be all the way from this guy.
Yeah, 100%.
That is bizarre,
isn't it?
Louis II. Sorry, aside. But yeah, so Louis II, who was king of Italy and as well the emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, he dies and his uncle, Charles the Bald, is elected new emperor.
Okay.
By the Council of Nobles. By the way, this whole period of time has the best names
right.
ever. There's so many good monikers. Like I know we get Alfred the Great and like William the Conqueror and stuff like that, but like this just, they're just cruel, a lot of them.
Charles the Fat.
Charles the Fat is one of them. Pepin the Short another one. Lothar the Lame, and also Charles the Straightforward.
Charles the Straightforward,
which is just fantastic.
And Ethelred the Unready.
I suppose that's the thing. Saxons also had one, which are quite mean.
Yeah.
Whereas these feel like this. We're slightly further. Well, not really, but it feels more proper. These. It feels like these are actually what like the courtiers would call them or something.
Yeah.
Whereas the Ethelred the Unready sounds like something just their enemies called them.
Yes. Which and that was after his death he would have been called that.
Yeah,
although I'm not sure if Charles the Fat was called Charles the Fat during...
Probably not. No. And Pepin the Short as well.
So many of these guys also die quite ridiculously.
Yeah, they're all over... Well, they're fighting all the time, and there's just... And a lot of people are dying at this time anyway, so it's...
But like,
it's
this, I can't remember who it was, but I remember this again. It's a sort of come back to me. One of the early leaders of Francia died by riding his horse... after a lady who he wanted to sleep with threw a house and he hit his head on the lintel of the door and it snapped his neck.
These are the people who ruled the land back in the day.
It's mad.
Like, it's, I know we complain about our politicians now and they are often terrible, but at least they're somewhat competent. They're not just weirdos who have been given far too much power and privilege and have no idea how to act and get themselves killed like this.
It's so true.
That is quite funny. But then you also get people like Charlemagne. So
exactly.
You know.
This is the thing. It's a genealogy lottery.
It is. Which, you know, is... No, it's not great. It's not a good way of running places.
No, it's not.
But yeah, so Charles the Bald takes over. He was already king of West Francia. Interestingly, everyone, like the titles and stuff, people are just swapping them all over the place. Normally, the Holy Roman Emperor goes to a king already, or they'll get a new kingship, and it's kind of all over the place. But he had claimed the kingdom of Italy from his dead nephew as well, so he's got a lot out of this. But there were many in Rome who opposed Charles the Bald and instead preferred his brother, a man named Louis the German.
Ah, okay.
Who was from the more German side of that empire.
Yeah.
And one of these people who preferred Louis the German was Formosus.
Okay.
So because the Pope at the time, Pope John the Eighth, he was a fan of Charles the Bald, so it meant that this is already a kind of dividing line within Rome. A lot of the supporters of Louis the German decide to flee Rome because they fear persecution, they fear all sorts of things. Even though they're not really supposed to run away. Like, legally, they're still supposed to hang around.
Yeah.
So John the Eighth decides to first command all of these cardinals to come back, including Formosus.
Okay.
Most of them refuse, including Formosus, and so John the Eighth excommunicates all of them, which is a big deal.
Yeah,
like that's being completely cut off from your entire power base, your entire sphere of influence, your entire life.
Also, that's you being very secular. It also meant that they couldn't get into the kingdom of heaven.
Yes,
which actually back then really, really fucking mattered because life wasn't great on the ground.
But then would they? Yes, it's weird because it feels like the respect for the Pope's word. Is it kind of an all-time low during this period. In fact, it gets worse later. But it's like, I wonder if these cardinals will be like, fine, I've been excommunicated, but by a pope who doesn't deserve to be able to do that, so I probably will be let into the kingdom of heaven.
They probably are hedging their bets. Yeah, well, this is the thing. You get these anti-popes, basically.
Yes, I saw this popping up. Which I was like, ooh, is this like a demonic Satanist pope? But no, it's just to distinguish if there's two popes.
Yeah.
One of them is in Rome, in the Vatican City. The other one is called the anti-pope, just to make historians' notes easier to read.
But also because it was just factionalism. It's as simple as that. It's like this, what you're saying here. You've got Rome in the middle with all of that religiosity power.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like any other power base, and you have factions. And so in this case, and this happened every time there was a new Holy Roman Emperor or a new king coming on the throne, in this one, you've got Charles the Bald with his cardinals, who he's probably paid.
Yeah.
And then on the other, or threatened, because he's got the bigger army. Yep. And on the other side, you've got the other guys who are with Louis the German. And it'll
who
be
probably were
that.
Also paid and threatened.
Yes, exactly. That's so the thing.
Yeah, it's not the kind of spiritual center you want from for the capital of your faith.
Well, in some ways, it was a more honest time because that's what they needed was legitimacy from one another.
Yes.
And it's just that since then, through the high Middle Ages and the late Middle Ages, it became all fluffed up with like sort of all this sort of popery around it.
Mm. Yeah, 100%.
Pardon the pun. Anyway, carry on.
So, Formosus is driven away. It seems like he may have also been slightly more targeted by John the Eighth than others. It seems like Formosus and John the Eighth had a bit of a beef. It's possible that John was just threatened by Formosus, who was a younger man and was building a lot of influence. You know, they're all on the lookout for who's going to try and replace them.
Okay.
There was also this issue I mentioned earlier about Formosus potentially wanting to become Archbishop of Bulgaria, again, expanding out his power. And it seems like John the Eighth was the one who rejected that.
Yeah.
So didn't want him to becoming too powerful. Also, it's technically against the rules.
But I'm going to ask you, so is Formosus in Rome for all this, or is he out in Bulgaria?
I think he is now, it's hard to say, and I don't think we know for sure.
Okay.
So I would assume, because Bulgaria is quite far away.
It's a long bloody way,
so I think it's more likely that he went over, did a fantastic job, and then came back with a request to become the Archbishop of Bulgaria.
Sure.
And was maybe rejected. Although arguably he probably would have been, although powerful out in Bulgaria, it's far away in Bulgaria, so less ability to meddle in Holy Roman Emperor politics.
Well, exactly. He's far closer to the other power base in Constantinople.
True. That's an interesting point of view, and I wonder if... And there's also an interesting undercurrent for a lot of this about how popes react to the Byzantines.
Mm.
Because it's an odd relationship, because they're both kind of claiming to be the inheritors of this Roman Empire, but in slightly different ways. And the Byzantines have their own church.
They like, do after the schism.
It's really interesting. But they're still connected. There's not as much animosity as, for instance, like Protestants and Catholics, which is a messy divorce.
Yeah.
Pun.
nice.
But yeah, this is a slight... There's a bit more respect there. It's kind of just two different ways of looking at things.
Yeah.
So there's an interesting undercurrent to that. So that's a good point. And actually, maybe Formosus being, although further away from Rome, but closer to Constantinople, could have been a threat to John the Eighth.
100%, yeah.
By the way, I'm really going to try to keep track of the names of the popes, but there are a lot in this story.
Okay. Well, we're at John the Eighth.
We're on the John the Eighth. We'll be leaving John the Eighth straight away.
Okay. Forget John the Eighth.
Yeah, he does not last very long. So in 882, John the Eighth is assassinated by his own clerics.
Brilliant.
Which is the first case of papal assassination.
How did we not get to that?
So, because of a technicality, he is the first case of a papal assassination, not counting all of the popes who were martyred.
Okay, no.
Much earlier on.
In our earlier series, as an assassination podcast, how do we miss a papal assassination?
Well, he's not the only one, and it sounds like he was just poisoned and then clubbed by a hammer.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he was just not really liked.
Not much of a story there.
Yeah, there's little bits and pieces, but he was just not really liked. And so, again, a cabal of not noblemen, but clergymen just hammered him. So okay. It's fair. It's probably not as much of a story.
Bye, John.
Yeah, so John's gone.
Rest in pieces.
So John's successor, Pope Marinus I, pardoned Formosus and allowed him to come back into the fold. So you can see there's this kind of shifting between potentially two spheres of influence, almost two parties maybe between Rome, about how they treat the Holy Roman Empire politics of the day.
Sure, yeah, I see that.
So Marinus I seems like a good guy. He brings him back. Formosus comes back to his diocese in Porta Santa Rufina in 883. Over the next 8 years, Formosus is just starting to really build a huge power base. I think he's very popular. He's very good. I mean, he was able to win over all the Bulgarians. He's obviously quite a charismatic man. He is popular within his own circles.
Okay.
Within Rome. I mean, he's one of many who get excommunicated and forced out because of their choices of who wanted to be Holy Roman Emperor. So he's obviously got other people who agree with him. Mm. And he's building this kind of big power base and really extending his influence.
Okay.
Until in 891, he is elected Pope.
Ah, okay.
So Marinus, I think, just dies.
Oh, really? Just, I mean, dies?
Well, you could say that for a lot of them, but I think also popes are generally very old men.
By the time they get that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So, well, although people are dying quickly, so it's probably a bit lower, but the death rate is probably a bit higher as well. It's a stressful job as well. They're probably dying from heart attacks.
I was going to say, so how old is Formosus roughly in this time?
He's 75, so he's an old boy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Don't you think that's mad in that time period to be in the 10th century? Wait, yeah, no, 9th century.
Yeah, and he's well travelled. He's been to Bulgaria. I assume he's travelled around a lot. Italy. Yeah, he's doing all right. Wow. He's got God's protection on his
side. Clearly.
Yeah,
all that holy water.
75. It's pretty decent, really.
It really is.
It also feels fast here because I've had to race through his early life because there's not much on him.
No, that's fine. No, no.
Popes don't really get that much of a story until they become pope, and by then they are very senile.
That's so true. A bit like the presidents of the United States.
Yeah. If you're listening to this in the future, this is January 2025. We are talking about this, if that gives any reasoning about why we're saying that. So we now have Pope Formosus. He has risen to the top. He is the Vicar of Christ. Is that the thing? The top pontiff, the big cheese.
The big man, the big
Holy
dog.
See. Well, he's not the Holy See. He inhabits the Holy See.
Yeah.
It's complicated, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's there. Is he called... Does he keep his name, Formosus?
Yes, which also makes me think it may not have been his original name.
Okay, okay.
But he's also Pope Formosus... the nothing. He's not Pope Formosus the First like Marinus the First was. No one else takes his name.
So it's like King John, which doesn't necessarily bode well for his legacy.
Not great. But he, you know, if you Google search him, he's the only one who comes up.
Okay. Yeah.
So probably wasn't thinking of that at that time. No. But it worked out well. But it is an interesting name, and it's not a biblical name, I think.
No, I don't think it... Well, I don't know. I don't know my Bible that well, but I wouldn't say it is. It sounds to me late Roman.
Yeah, it's not like John and Stephen and... Is Stephen a biblical name?
Yeah.
But there's a lot... Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. We should probably read the Bible at some point. It comes up a lot in this, don't we?
I've read a lot around the Bible, but I've never read the Bible. You know what I mean?
Watched a lot of the films.
Yeah, exactly.
Prince of Egypt.
Exodus.
Yeah. Never seen Passion of the Christ, but...
I have.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it good?
No. Mel Gibson. No.
Life of Brian.
Oh, now that.
What more do we need?
Where do you think I'm getting all my information
from? Yeah, exactly.
That and the holy hand grenade.
So, Pope Formosus, he takes office and he is immediately pulled into European politics, as all popes are at this time.
Okay.
So, there's a few fights that he has to pick a side in. So one of them is a crisis around the Patriarchate of Constantinople, who is essentially the Eastern Orthodox's church's pope.
Okay.
So
the top dog of the Eastern... Okay, yeah,
so
gotcha.
He's being asked to essentially help advise and mediate because there is a brand new patriarchate, Stephen the First, which is confusing given the story because we have a Stephen later, but this is separate.
They have their own numbering system.
Exactly, yeah. Separate church.
Different church, different religion.
Stephen the First has recently taken over from his predecessor and is essentially trying to nullify everything that his predecessor did.
Like most popes do, right?
Yes, exactly. And that actually... is relevant later in Formosus' story.
Okay.
But so he's asked to mediate on that, and I think he largely says that you can't get rid of everything and just tries to be a kind of calming influence on this other church, which is why I find it really interesting, because they should be rivals in a way, but they clearly are sort of allies.
I think also there are so many other things that should take up their time. If the whole world was Christian, they would be at each other's throats.
Yes.
But because they've got pagans all around them, and you've got the Islam, not
the Saracens,
the Saracens coming up the side, like they have bigger fish to fry. And they are the close. It's like they both have the same enemies.
100%. Yeah.
They
need to be allies in this, otherwise they're just going to both get swallowed up.
Especially because they are religious, not secular. So they can chat religious to religious. It's only when secular power comes in that they then have to take sides. So if Constantinople went to war with Rome, then they wouldn't be able to talk.
Yes.
But if they're not, then it's like, well,
They can slowly still be in touch and cordial. Help each other out.
Yeah.
100%. So he's involved in this. There is also another crisis in France, or West Francia, as I think it's... I don't know when it starts being called France as opposed to West Francia, but somewhere around here.
Yeah.
But you have Otto of Paris, who is in a fight with our friend from earlier, Charles the Straightforward.
Ah, Charles Straightforward. Great. Poor man.
But apparently it's not a insult. It is kind of a compliment. Straightforward just means it's a kind of roughly mistranslation. It just means he was loyal and without guile. So he just wasn't sneaky. He wasn't creating these weird plots.
He was just a good guy.
He was just a good guy, an honest guy.
In a bad world. The fact that is your moniker is like, wow, how bad did things get?
We just need someone straightforward.
Please, who could we have? That guy looks all right.
God, that does sound like modern politics. We're all like, God, if just Keir was just boring for a little bit, then I think that'd be fine. Like,
as
long as Labour can be boring and we can pay attention to other things, like, that's all we need.
Exactly.
And that's probably what we're thinking now. It's just, let's just have someone straightforward. Let's not have someone fat or short or weird
or bald
or anything like any of these other weirder ones. Just straightforward, straight shooter, honest.
Yeah.
So they're having a bit of a tiff over who can rule West Francia.
Okay.
Formosus backs Charles, which is an interesting point as well, because although I haven't read too much into the details of this, I don't know how much influence Formosus had in this. If he tipped the scales, it's actually huge for all of Europe, because Charles the Straightforward is the Frankish king who has to deal with the Viking Rollo who invades, and he marries his daughter off to Rollo, who become Normans.
Yeah.
They're kind of Normans to begin with, because they are Northmen coming in. But this is the start of Normandy and the Norman conquest of everywhere in Europe. And it's Charles the Straightforward who agrees to that. Maybe if it had been Otto of Paris,
he could have fought him off.
And he could have stayed, and maybe we would never have had Normans.
Fascinating.
But the biggest clash that he has to deal with is, again, who is going to sit upon the throne of the Holy Roman Empire.
Okay.
So at this time, when Formosus becomes Pope, the throne is currently held by a fella called Guy III of Spoleto. And he is quite an interesting dude, because he's kind of from a very small province and just has a good political mind, is able to make allies, wins a few battles, and eventually makes himself king of Italy and the emperor of the Holy Roman Empire.
Yeah, that's amazing. I would just quickly caveat, just in case people don't know this, I don't know if we mentioned this earlier, you got elected to these roles, so being Holy Roman Emperor isn't just a question of your lineage. It's also, if you seem like, it's quite a good system, really. If you seem like a particularly good guy and you have a power base around you, then you could be elected Holy Roman Emperor. That's why we don't have these big families that we're talking about.
Well, he is also a descendant of Charlemagne.
Yeah. But he had so many descendants.
Yeah.
You had to be in the general thing.
Part of the aristocracy, which were all related to Charlemagne.
Yeah, but you wouldn't have a power base if you weren't in there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
But what I mean is, it's not like the Holy Roman Emperor dies and that guy's son takes over automatically. That's not the game.
No, 100%. And that's one of the biggest problems, is the fact that there's such a big question mark at the end of any reign of a Holy Roman Emperor.
It's stressful thinking about it now.
It is. It's too much.
It is.
Well, funnily enough, Guy III also thought that, because he tries to get his, and successfully gets his son crowned as co-emperor.
Aha.
Because he wants to shore up that power base. He isn't one of the like core descendants of Charlemagne. He's not son of Charles the Fat. He doesn't, as far as I can see, even have a nickname, which is outrageous.
Yeah, that
he's just Guy III. Did it say anything actually on this tree I saw? Okay, no, just Duke of Spoleto.
Oh, that's not good.
He's just Guy III.
Maybe he didn't live long enough to get a moniker.
But Guy III is Holy Roman Emperor. But he is Holy Emperor when the Formosus becomes pope. So the Formosus didn't really have any say in that, didn't have a huge amount of sway in that. And Formosus isn't a big fan of Guy III. He thinks he's a bit of an interloper, bit of a pretender. He's from kind of a distant line to Charlemagne. He's not really one of the main guys that Formosus is a big fan of.
Okay.
But Formosus couldn't really do much about this guy because he was already Holy Roman Emperor. He's not really supposed to be like dethroning emperors. Like, he can maybe meddle in the politics when there's a changeover, but he can't really be just going, I'm going to throw you over. I mean, he's the head of a church. Papal States isn't that powerful. They're not supposed to be invading places.
No, that...
Yeah. Especially Christian places.
But I guess he hasn't got that much time. If he's already 75, I imagine this guy's a little bit younger.
Yes.
So he's like, oh, damn it.
Yeah, a real waste. But unfortunately, so Guy III, as I say, wanted to get his son crowned co-emperor.
Ah.
And it's Pope Formosus who has to do it.
Okay.
So he very begrudgingly does it. And he has to crown Guy's 12-year-old son, Lambert.
Lambert.
And suddenly Lambert becomes co-emperor. Which is an interesting, and I don't know how many other places have done that, where not just making them heir apparent, which I guess is still up in the air, he's like, no, he is co-emperor. So as soon as I die, you still have an emperor.
It's the late Roman Empire model. They used to do that a lot.
Really?
Mm,
interesting.
Because they were like, we have to secure power. And that's why.
So I guess it's just an empire thing? Like, they've just like, there's precedence for emperors? Like, kings don't...
Well, the Holy Roman Emperors, especially these early ones, are harking back to Rome.
Yes.
The dream which was Rome. As in the Roman Empire, not the Republic.
Yeah.
And so that's their playbook. That's what they're looking at. And so this is where the co-emperor thing comes out.
Right, okay. Makes sense. So we've got Formosus, who's having to deal with this Holy Roman Emperor and deal with his bratty little son, who's now crowned Lambert.
With a weird name. It's like Norbert. Name.
It is. It seems like a popular name.
Although, only Lambert I know is Lambert Simnel, who's that guy who rose up against Henry VII.
Yeah, that. Or the Witcher from Witcher 3.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that's who I know.
Yeah.
One of these days we'll do an episode on just Witcher lore and I'll know way more than you. It'll be great.
Whatever floats your boat.
I was just going to look because I'm sure there were other Lamberts in this big list I saw, but maybe he was the only one, actually. There's a lot of Louis, there's a lot of Lothars. I think he is the only Lambert here.
There's a reason, it's a terrible name.
I think there are other Lamberts within their family. So I don't know where, but also...
It sounds very British.
Dukes of Spoleto, especially was part of Italy.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound Italian.
Lamberto.
Maybe Lombards?
Possibly. Who were German.
Yeah, so that must be where it comes from. Because Guy...
Or is it Lombert? It could be a French one. B-E-R-T is a French
one. Guy, actually.
Guy.
It
could have been Guy de Troyes.
Guy de Troyes. And Lambert?
Lambert.
Lambert. Right, I'm going to do that from now on.
Okay.
So this is going to be really confusing. Yeah. I'm going to say, and people are like, I can't remember who that person was.
No,
because they'll come back into the story and it's not going to make any sense. But I'm going to go for it. So Formosus really wanted to get rid of Guy and his son Lambert.
Okay.
But he can't do anything. So he decides to call upon a friend. Now, do you remember Louis the German?
I do.
He's dead, but he has a grandson named Arnulf, who is currently the king of East Francia, kind of the king of Bavaria. It's slowly becoming Bavaria as opposed to just East Francia.
Yeah.
So we're already 2 years into the reign of Formosus, and he has this great idea to invite King Arnulf down to drive off Guy and restore the Holy Roman Emperor to its proper place within the main line.
Oh, so Arnulf is more... Oh, okay, because Louis the German is more main branch line. Right, 100%. Okay. So Guy the Third is in trouble here.
Yes, Guy is not looking great.
Okay.
So this does seem like a kind of a great idea, except it takes quite a while. So King Arnulf initially sends his son, Zwentibold, which is a great name.
Zwentibold.
Way better than Lambert.
Yeah.
If we're picking sides, we're mainly banking it on names.
Of course.
And Zwentibold heads south to drive Guy the Third off. But unfortunately, sickness, he has to retreat a couple of times, and then sickness kind of destroys his army, and they end up having to limp back to Bavaria, which isn't great.
Classic.
And then later, Guy the Third actually dies quite suddenly, which you would think would make things easier. But it seems to just make things more complicated, really, because now there is kind of an emperor in Lambert who's been sort of crowned by Pope Formosus. Like, before, Guy was crowned by the previous pope, but now Lambert can say, well, you crowned me.
Yeah.
Like, you did this. Like, I am, you know, you should be on my side.
Yeah, Formosus is definitely having regrets.
It's a weird situation.
Sure.
And Lambert is now 14 years old, which by this period is now a man.
Yeah,
and is
it's
now,
adult.
You know,
It's marriageable age.
Marriageable age. I don't know if he's married at this point, actually. It's interesting. He does. He is, seems to be not necessarily in the care of, but he's very close to his mother, Egiltrude.
Okay.
Who kind of features in the story as well. So he's obviously helping guide him, but he's 14-year-old, so you wouldn't really want to have your mum hanging around.
No. Awkward age. Awkward age. Awkward Probably age. Got acne.
Awkward age to become an emperor.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what age I'd rather be to become emperor, but anyway.
Exactly. So Lambert and his... This doesn't make sense now I'm saying Egiltrude, because that doesn't sound French at all.
No, it's very German.
I can't switch back to Lambert, though, can I?
You can.
Yeah, I can, sure. Listeners, keep up. This is getting complicated enough, but I'm making it worse. So Lambert decides that... And his mum, Lambert and his mum decide that they need to head back to Rome to kind of reaffirm his imperial crown, which is a bit of an odd take, because I guess maybe they're not fully aware that Formosus is...
Actually not trying to backstab them.
Yeah, and maybe behind King Arnulf invading.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a kind of secret thing. He's like, well, he crowned me once, he can crown me again.
Sure, sure.
So they march off to Rome and demand, or at least request, that Pope Formosus crowns Lambert and to reestablish him as Holy Roman Emperor. Pope Formosus refuses and they lock him in jail.
They lock Lambert in jail?
No. Lambert locks Pope Formosus in jail. So they fully take over Rome.
Oh, right. Okay. Fair enough.
Seemingly quite easy. I mean, the thing is, again, he's the emperor that this current pope crowned. So his soldiers walking into Rome probably wouldn't have been challenged.
No.
And they went, right, well, you're not doing it again. I'll get rid of you.
It's hard. It's really hard being a pope in this time because there's not much going for you.
I think so, too. I think it's very
I do feel sorry for Formosus. Okay.
Eventually, King Arnulf does arrive at Rome and besieges the city to try and rescue his friend Formosus and kick out this bratty little kid, Lambert. And actually, Lambert and his mother flee back to Spoleto, where they're from, and Arnulf is then crowned emperor.
By Formosus?
By Formosus.
Okay.
So Formosus is still around.
God, this is like the Wild West.
I knew this was going to be complicated to think, because there's a lot of back and forth. But yeah, Arnulf has successfully came south. He's been crowned. Seems like it's all over, right?
Yeah, this
the
feels
the pretenders
good.
Have fled back to their country, but Arnulf is chasing after them.
That's because
the imperial throne, the Pope at his back.
Yeah, better dead, though, than fled.
Yes, that would have been better.
God, that was nice. Anyway, go on.
You're proud of yourself.
I am.
Doesn't go well. So after pursuing Lambert and his mother all the way back to Spoleto, Arnulf suffers a stroke.
Oh, dear.
And is paralysed. Completely incapacitated.
Oh, no.
So he is taken home by his soldiers, and actually in 3 years' time he'll die, but he is nominally still Holy Roman Emperor.
For 3 years?
He is just incapacitated. I'm not sure if he's completely incapacitated for all of that time, but at least when they take him home, he leaves Italy unable to lead his men entirely.
Oh, poor guy. I liked Arnulf.
I liked Arnulf as well. He seemed like a... We have no basis of that, just that we liked his name and we didn't like Lambert.
Yes, exactly. But the problem is now Lambert is free. He's is crowned of Holy Roman Emperor already by yes. Formosus. Yeah. And Formosus is probably going, oh shit, he's coming back.
Yeah, which, you know, maybe gave him a heart attack because he dies.
Oh, this is what's...
896 in April.
Everyone's dropping like flies.
Yeah, hugely.
Okay, okay.
I mean, there's also, and this is definitely almost certain... This is rumour and hearsay and a lie. But there is a hint, especially with Arnulf, that he may have been poisoned, okay. potentially by Lambert's mother, Egiltrude. But it's probably because she was a vaguely powerful woman, and so they ascribe any death of an old man, which would be natural causes in any other part of the world, they will assume it's poisoning by this witcherous woman.
Of course, of course. Okay.
And probably think people thought similar for Formosus as well.
So Lambert is sitting pretty then?
Lambert is doing pretty well, and you'd think... I mean, you'd also think this story is over, because our main character is now dead.
Yeah, you would, actually.
You would think.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. That
this was this is really good.
Okay.
This is actually where it gets spicier.
Oh, even more spicy.
So, after Pope Formosus dies, his successor, Boniface VI, comes into power.
Okay.
And he takes office and dies 15 days later.
Oh, my
Just over 2 weeks.
What is going on?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like COVID, but worse.
Yeah. Actually, it's a good point. They haven't had the Black Death yet.
No, that came in the 14th century.
I mean, they would have had other things.
Yeah, yeah, surely, something yeah. killed them off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It seems like, though, the official reasoning for Boniface's death is gout. Again, some people suspected poisoning
yeah.
from Egiltrude, mainly because... Boniface's successor is Stephen VI, okay, who we heard at the beginning of this episode.
Yes, we did.
And he is very close to the Dukes of Spoleto, so very close to Lambert and his mother.
Gotcha.
So that is the assumption, that he got this position because of his connection with the Dukes of Spoleto, who at the moment, as you say, are sitting pretty. Lambert is Holy Roman Emperor. They are strong in the region, so they put a pope in charge. And that's where the rumour that Boniface was poisoned, to clear him out of the way to get Stephen.
Lambert's mother must have been the most successful poisoner of all time.
She did very well. Yeah.
How much poison does she have?
If it is her, I think good on her.
Yeah.
Like, these are all very corrupt men who, honestly, are also far too old to have this much power.
You know what she's doing? She's draining the swamp.
If anything, we know from experience, draining the swamp doesn't work. You just fill it up with more swamp.
Yeah.
So Stephen VI has now fully taken over. This seems like the perfect time for the Dukes of Spoleto, for Lambert. This is their epoch, really.
Yeah.
Holy Roman Emperor position secured. I think he's also maybe king of Italy.
You know what's weird? I can't remember the Lambertian Empire, though.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like it will last for very long.
No.
But things start to go weird. So,
okay,
Lambert and his mother are in the Vatican and have just seen Stephen VI get crowned. And some discussions between the three of them, maybe some other people, maybe mostly Stephen, decide that Pope Formosus got away with far too much. He kind of got away scot-free. He was never tried. He was never, you know, convicted of anything. He just died. Kind of unfair. Now he's sitting pretty up in heaven. Doesn't this seem unfair? Doesn't this seem unfair to you?
Yeah, I feel like this is the sort of chat that they were doing, like, over drinks. Like, they were so drunk. It's like, yeah, I remember that guy. Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
Fuck 100%. Him. Yeah, but yeah, he kind of got, I guess, air quotes, away with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's debatable there whether he got away with it, but he's seeing all his efforts crumble before his eyes and then dying.
And all he wanted to do was be the Archbishop of Bulgaria.
I know, imagine, he would have been just so happy.
Yeah, him and the king, kicking it off. Yeah.
Exactly. But Pope Stephen didn't like Formosus. It seems like he also may have had outside beef with him, because supposedly Stephen was made the Bishop of Anagni, which is another diocese near Rome, which apparently was against his will, so presumably not a particularly good diocese. And if you think he's connected to the Dukes of Spoleto, Pope Formosus was in power, he wouldn't want a cardinal who's close to his rivals or his enemies gaining influence. We probably pushed him to a tiny little diocese.
Yeah.
So Stephen does not like Formosus.
Okay.
And he really doesn't like Formosus, because when he comes to power, he orders Pope Formosus' body to be dug up and put on trial.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Which is just... Because that famously works.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be mostly one-sided, you would think.
It's giving spiteful.
It's
what it
is. Definitely giving spiteful.
Yeah.
And I've got to admit, we'll talk about it a bit later, but it's also vaguely questionable how involved Lambert and his mother were in this.
Yeah.
It seems like mostly Stephen, who's just this mad old pope who's like, I did not get... You know what? It's probably about, like, getting the last word.
Yeah.
Formosus got the last word by dying. It's kind of a power play, really.
It is.
It's the ultimate last word.
Yeah.
And Stephen just could not deal with that.
Yeah.
So he decided to dig him up, dress him up as a pope, sit him on a throne, and basically rant at him.
Oh my God.
In front of all the other cardinals, properly set up as a proper trial.
Did you just... No, hang on a second, though. I remember in the walkthrough, they gave him counsel.
Well, you know, it needs to at least seem fair.
Imagine getting that job. Well, what are you doing today, Lucius? Oh, nothing much. I'm just defending the Pope before the Pope.
Mm.
Like, this is the third Pope in a row. And it's like, oh, yeah, but he's dead, isn't he? Yeah, he is. Mm. Yep, so it's going to be quite difficult.
9 months dead.
Yep.
Which also, in a tomb... It seems skeletal is his position at the moment.
Oh, is it
really? But not, I imagine, not fully decomposed.
9 months isn't that long, especially if it's in a cold vault.
That's what I think. I think he was probably more preserved
than in the deep freeze.
In an unpleasant way. So it's It's not great.
No, that is horrible. Imagine being the poor guys who had to pull him out.
Yeah.
Put him in a seat.
I mean, you know, you'd be really worried about not making it into heaven.
Oh, you really would.
You'd be terrified.
Yeah. You would have to get so, like, a papal dispensation before you go in there.
Which they did.
Well, clearly.
It was by the Pope.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's also a lot of, I think a big part of this as well is at this time in Christianity's history, and especially the Catholic Church history, relics are a huge deal.
Yeah.
And although Pope Formosus wasn't martyred and he hadn't become a saint or anything, the bodies of these very important religious figures were seen as connections to heaven and their connection to heaven as well. So there is, I think that a lot of historians think that's the kind of thinking, in that Stephen was maybe wanted to deny, he wanted to like revoke the holiness of Formosus, and you could do that by attacking the body of him, because his body was something more than just bones and dust. It was a relic. It was something.
He's trying to strip him of his VIP status in heaven.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Which is, it makes a little bit more sense. Not a lot more sense, granted. No, but it makes a little bit more sense.
And also, Rome does funny things to people, because like the Roman emperors, there's so many weird things that happen.
Yeah.
And even after they're gone and they're over in, you know, Constantinople, there's something in the air in Rome. And it just keeps going.
It's just wrong.
Yeah.
We should as a civilization, we need to move away from Rome.
I adore the city. It's one of my favorite cities.
The Roman Empire.
Yeah.
Right, Rome, lovely.
Yeah.
Wonderful place.
Yeah.
Can't say more.
You could go mad about it.
Yeah, exactly. So this is known as the Cadaver Synod, which essentially means like trial of a corpse. Cadaver is obviously body. It's an interesting also play on words, because cadaver is normally about exploring a dead body to see what killed it. It's kind of got that kind of exact medical examination.
Yeah.
Whereas this is a kind of legal examination of a person who's dead.
Yeah.
So there's an interesting part to that as well. And as I say, Formosus' body was dressed up as a pope, given all the arraignments. You'll find out why in a sec. And as you pointed out, Stephen wasn't quite mad enough to assume that Formosus would defend himself. So a deacon is found to mount a defense, obviously picked by Stephen and told exactly what to say. Do not make a good defense. You are there to lose.
Yeah.
Which is rough. I'm imagining a very young guy. He's never had a case before. He's been summoned by the Pope
probation, right?
Probably. Yeah, exactly. And he's like, I've got a brilliant task for you. You need to spectacularly lose whilst defending a corpse.
You need to throw the fight.
Yes, exactly. Mm. Not that it's a fight that can particularly be won.
No.
And it really seems that Stephen is a bit mad, to be honest, at this point, because there's not a huge amount we know specifically about the events of the trial, because unsurprisingly, a later pope burns all the records, all the official records, because they do not want people knowing too much about this. But what we do know is that Stephen had placed himself as chief prosecutor, and was, as I was acting out at the beginning, hurling accusations at this corpse that had no ability to respond, and was just, I guess, just winning and doing a great job of being a lawyer, but just bizarre.
Very weird. And can you imagine being in the synod, like the other guys going,
yeah,
gosh, Stephen, I think we've got a problem
here. I know we've gone through a few popes, and I wasn't a big fan of the last guy, but
like,
this is weird.
Who's shattering his cereal?
I know. Like, this is
what's going on.
There's
here?
Something wrong here. So unsurprisingly, Pope Stephen convicts.
Oh, really?
He is.
Shock.
Formosus is found guilty.
Crazy. Didn't see that coming.
I don't know if there was a jury. I mean, it's a synod. It's not like a normal trial or like a trial. So it sort of feels like Pope. I mean, other than this obviously being the case because of this very bizarre scenario, but it seems like also if it was a normal trial, the Pope is judge, jury, and maybe not executioner, but can kind of decide what he wants. Maybe a panel of cardinals, but they also have to toe the line because their Pope is mad.
Yes, and patronage, very important.
100%.
Yeah.
So at the end of the trial, Formosus is pronounced guilty on all accounts. His election as Pope is declared invalid, so he is no longer officially a Pope.
Rude.
All his measures and acts while he was Pope are annulled.
Oh, no, really?
So remember that?
Yeah, he did that for the Patriarchate over in Constantinople.
Well, Thomas seems to have tried to defend the guy when he was saying you can clear off all the... or you can nullify all the acts from the previous Patriarchate.
Yeah.
But... that this happens to Formosus, sadly.
I don't think Formosus was that bad.
No, not at all. He's Stephen's just, insane.
Okay.
His papal vestments, which Stephen had ordered placed on the corpse, are now torn off his body.
Okay.
In a dramatic show of power, I guess. And the three fingers from Formosus' right hand that he would have used for blessings are severed.
Oh my God.
Yes.
This is just so petty.
It's very petty.
The guy's dead. You're Pope.
I know.
You are
Move
Pope.
On.
Yes. What a waste of time. Body and mutilation.
Also, and
on
this...
a Wednesday.
On a Wednesday.
But I presume it was on a weekday.
I mean, it's a good point. I wonder if it's, I didn't read at a specific day. I think not a specific day, because, again, the official records were burned. Maybe it was. Let me just double check to see if I... No, I've not seen anywhere... It was in 897 at some point. It okay. sounds like it was summer, because there's hints that people say the following summer as well.
Well, but also, if it was summer, the corpse is going to stink.
Oh, it's going to be grim, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, not fun.
No.
And also, it seems like, and this is definitely hearsay, and you know, it might not be true, but there's some records say that, which is even madder that Stephen ploughed on, supposedly during the trial, Rome experienced a small earthquake. That oh. rattled the windows of the church they were in, of the basilica they were in, which I think most people would think is a message from God.
Right.
To say, cool it, this is weird.
Yes, and cool it, because he used to have your job. And
yeah.
What do you think is going to happen to you if you do this to him? Because that's the problem. When you start chopping off heads or digging up old kings, you start damaging the brand. You start damaging the brand, everything goes tits up.
God, he's not a team player, is he?
No, Stephen? He's an idiot.
He doesn't get the gig.
No.
So finally, Formosus's body is taken away and is buried in an unmarked grave outside the city, potentially in a foreigner's grave.
Okay.
And then Stephen changes his mind, digs it back up. So that's the second time it's dug up, and orders it to be thrown into the Tiber River.
Oh.
Which you're talking about emulating old Rome. Very common, throwing bodies into the Tiber River. Mm. So Formosus would have been joining at least five other emperors, probably more, and according to some legends, Pontius Pilate.
Really?
Supposedly have been thrown in the... like some things. I think that's kind of unlikely, but quite bizarre.
Bizarre.
So there's a lot of bodies down there.
And you wonder why everyone's dying.
Yeah.
There are corpses in the water.
Their life-providing water is just filled with corpses of emperors and popes. And
yeah, it's where you get cholera and typhoid and things like that. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Interestingly, and actually that has reminded me, we have had a body dug up and thrown in a river before. I won't Ooh. Be able to remember his name, but it was one of the Patsy conspirators who rose up against the Medici family in our very first series.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Last episode of our very first series.
Oh, it might have been. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because it was the Assassin's Creed-y one.
Yeah.
One of the guys, maybe the head of the Patsy family, is... or is he the one? They all have terrible deaths, but one of them is definitely buried, dug back up, and then thrown in the water. And it almost sounds like... in that telling, it sounded like they buried him with the intention of digging him back up.
Yeah.
Like it's insult to bury them in the wrong place and then also throw them away. Because also, whereas Stephen, I feel like it's a change of mind, either because he's mad, which we've figured out he probably is, but also potentially to not allow a specific place where followers of Formosus and fans of Formosus could congregate and really turn him into a martyr.
Yeah, and venerate him.
I think there's probably a lot of that actually... if you have a body of an enemy that you've gotten rid of, you need it vanished. You can't have a specific place that people could take pilgrimages to and like rally around.
But can you imagine? It's like, okay, I've got that out of my system. Just deal with it. And he sort of sends his guy off.
He calms down. He's like, oh, that may have been a bad idea. That may have been. Wait a minute.
Hang on. And another thing.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, what do you do with the body? What do you do with it?
Yeah.
I buried it.
No. Just an unmarked grave? That's not enough.
Sorry, the river. Yeah, the river for him.
Yeah.
Which ironically wouldn't... surely someone would have seen the body in the river.
Well, supposedly... weighted down and then thrown in the river.
Okay.
And also supposedly, and this is again rumours, hearsay, whatever, supposedly his body does wash up and he's taken away by a monk, an unnamed monk, who takes it away and looks after it so that it doesn't... I don't know, wither away in the water or...
Oh, right, yeah.
I don't...
Did you bury it? Otherwise, it's a little creepy.
Well, the body comes back into the story a little bit again.
Oh my God, okay. So
he obviously, keeps it safe.
Okay.
Stops it in a jar or something. Because again, he's living in Rome, run by the Pope who hates Formosus, and there's soldiers of the Holy Roman Emperor who also hated Formosus, so it's not like he can dramatically look after him. He needs to hide the body somewhere.
Okay. Maybe he's pickling something somewhere. Yeah, yeah.
Also, supposedly, Formosus' corpse was doing miracles when it came back up.
Of course.
I don't know what those miracles are, but...
But he's trying to become a saint.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Some miracles.
Yeah, because you need two miracles in order to become a saint. It's one part of it.
I don't think anything he's done has been miraculous, to be honest. Honestly, he's an interesting guy. But the most interesting part happens after he's dead.
Yes, it's true.
Which is sad. And sadly, because of this crazy Stephen guy. So, Stephen is still hanging around, but obviously the mood in the city is sour. Stephen is very unpopular, obviously. Formosus did have quite a lot of supporters, but I think even followers and like fans of Lambert and fans of people who were maybe previously fans of Stephen, they're not feeling the vibe anymore.
No, I get why. I can see that. Yeah.
So it's really, it's an odd situation to be in. And Stephen doesn't last very long.
Oh, so, shock. Was this a heart attack? Poisoning?
No. So he is imprisoned, and then the night he's imprisoned, a unnamed man comes into his cell and strangles him.
Of course.
So
how Roman of him.
Which is fun, because that is the second papal assassination. So I've got two papal assassinations in this story.
Yes.
Not that far apart.
And an exhumation.
And both connected to Pope Formosus.
Yes.
So if you want to get tin hatty about this, he may, you know, for all we know, he caused the assassination of John VIII. And then from the grave... He left instructions. Exactly.
Yeah. Open if I am dug up. Yeah. Open when I die.
Yeah. There's a letter that says, if I was put on trial by Stephen, then buried, then dug back up again, then thrown into the Tiber River, break this seal and I have left instructions.
Exactly.
In this case. It's only if those events that he ordered the assassination of Stephen.
Yeah.
So Stephen is murdered. The next pope only lasts another 3 months. The pope after that only lasts 19 days.
Oh my God, was this 7 popes are on now?
Yes, many popes.
Okay.
And then we finally reach John the Ninth, who lasts considerably longer. And he is the pope that decides this whole cadaver synod was a nightmare. He nullifies the whole thing. He reinstates Formosus as pope. He finds the body, this monk was looking after him, or he just finds a random body in the river. There's apparently loads of them.
Yeah.
Claims it's Formosus and buries it in St. Peter's Basilica.
Okay.
As it should be.
Interesting. Okay. So Stephen, no one tried to dig him up then?
It's not clear about what happens to Stephen's body. I think they just bury him normally.
And think, just... wow, that one was a weirdo.
Honestly, I mean, the way that Christianity works, and not to get into religion, it sounds like they'll all be up there. Also, it sounds like Stephen's personal hell would be in heaven with Formosus, which is quite funny.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably what they would do.
Okay, nice. I like that.
So yeah, so that's kind of the end of our story. I've got a couple extra things, because also I had mentioned before that it seems that possibly Lambert and his mother weren't necessarily involved. I think there's the kind of older assumption about the story was that it was prompted by Lambert and his mother.
Sure.
Again, probably a slightly sexist telling of the story to make Lambert's mother seem vindictive and, you know, aggressive. But there's also evidence to suggest that Lambert actually was on vaguely good terms with Formosus.
Okay.
And when John the Ninth comes in later and he nullifies the cadaver synod, he does this at his own synod where he declares that, and Lambert is actually there and gives his approval. So presumably John the Ninth wasn't saying this was the most disgusting thing ever to Lambert, who was the cause of it.
No, sure.
So most interpretations nowadays, actually, he may not have been fully involved. And then Lambert also had a cousin, Guy the Fourth, I think it is, who was also involved at the time. And maybe his actions had triggered Formosus to ask King Arnulf to invade. It's very complicated.
Very.
It's a bit more vague because there aren't
great
records.
It sounds far more likely that it was that personal feud between Stephen and...
Yeah, 100%.
Formosus.
And it feels like, at the very least, Stephen is definitely involved because he was the one ranting at this dead body.
Yeah, fair enough.
And Stephen just seems like a maniac. But this whole debacle really kicks off in really the lowest point, what is considered the lowest point in the papacy's history.
Yeah.
It even has a name. So some historians call it the Saeculum Obscurum, which is essentially like the Dark Century. It sounds like it's vaguely to the Dark Ages, but specifically there's like 100 years where they're having a pope every 3 years. And actually yeah. there's 9 years where there are 9 popes.
Oh my God.
And that's part of this because it's just there's so many. But it also has another great name, which I'd never heard of this word before, but it's sometimes referred to as the papal pornocracy.
Pornocracy.
Pornocracy. Because pornocracy is ruled by prostitutes. Which is a great term. I mean, and obviously this is just like calling all these
corrupt
whores, and arguably if the prostitutes were running things, it'd probably been a lot smoother.
Yeah.
I'd say. I mean, it much would. Better than these old weirdos. But yeah, so this kind of kicks off this very dark time where there's a lot of corruption. I think they've just lost all pretenses that they are holy and above everything.
And they just go to town on each other.
Yeah.
Madness.
Unbelievable.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. It's funny when you think about like that time period around Formosus. So Formosus 891 through to 896, whatever it was, Alfred the Great's time, right? Alfred is doing that stuff over there, and he's going on about how amazing the popes are.
yeah.
Actually, they are.
We need to fight off these pagans because we are true Christians. We know our way is the right way. This is what we should be doing.
Yeah.
And in Pope, you've got Stephen. I mean, not the same time, but Stephen screaming at a
pretty much the same time.
It's close.
900 is when Alfred is kicking about.
Yeah.
So it's only a couple of years
before that. Is he alive during this?
Yeah. I think it's King Alfred's brother is in charge in 896.
He was king of the Anglo-Saxons from 886.
Yeah.
He's fully around during this debacle.
I think he dies in 900.
899.
Right, yeah. So he's literally talking about Formosus.
This is his time period where he's trying to convince all of England that... or convincing the Danes that you need to convert to Christianity.
Yeah, and actually going on, it's like, no, you're a dick.
Yeah,
I'm going to kill you. And it's just ridiculous.
Pope's getting strangled or clubbed to death. And
I just wonder if Alfred had actually arrived expecting.
Like, Jesus Christ.
You know how you... Have you heard of Paris syndrome?
Oh, yeah. When you go to Paris and it's disappointing.
Yeah, and people kind of go a bit mad for a bit. I can imagine him doing that Rome syndrome, like a papal syndrome.
He went to Rome, though, as well.
He did, but later. I mean, earlier,
Earlier, so probably
during Formosus' good times, maybe?
Formosus' good times. Well, I mean, you know, this period of this papal pornocracy is considered to be after this event. So this is, I mean, it's starting to get worse during this time period leading up to it. It's just because they have a rapid series of short papacies, but it's lots of internal politics, which, you know, Alfred would be used to. It's not quite the screaming at a dead body, trying to make yourself look cool era.
I mean, I imagine when that came through via Raven or whatever, I mean, honestly, Alfred would have gone, fuck, this isn't good. Put it in the fire. Don't tell anyone.
Maybe Thor is kind of cool. Maybe that sounds a little better. Yeah. We don't have to rely on these maniacs over in Italy.
This is so true. So true. Well, what a tale. Thank you for... I have to admit, when you started doing this, I was like, you're diving into some murky waters. There's a lot down there.
It's so complicated. I mean, I've got this tree that I was using to... And I hope this has been at least kind of easy to follow with all the different people. I appreciate I made it worse by changing the names halfway through and then changing back. But the important ones are the popes, and even them are hard to follow. But the important ones is Formosus and this mad guy, Stephen. The rest of it, if you didn't quite catch it, there's a million videos online that do a better job of explaining this very complicated period in European history. It is very complicated. You're not going to really be able to understand it until you've into it.
I think we did a pretty good, decent job. So well done, Patrick.
Thanks. We'll see what people say. I mean, we asked you guys to rate and review this at the beginning.
Yeah.
If you want to leave a specific feedback to how I explained the Carolingian politics and the Holy Roman Emperor and then the different popes, if that really didn't work for you, feel free to give us 1 star.
But please do judge us as a body of work.
Oh, yeah. This is, you know what? This is exactly what the Pope said.
Yes.
The Pope, John the Ninth, is like, look, I know we've had some bad spots, but overall we've done pretty well, I
remember
think.
Peter? Remember the Martyrs? Remember
Peter? He was pretty good. Yeah, pretty good. Yeah.
Ignore, Jesus.
Ignore Stephen. It's a dark point, but overall we're pretty good.
Yeah. Well, on that hilarious note, I think we should call this a day.
Yes, let's end it. This is already quite a long one. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. This has been very fun. And yeah, welcome to 2025. We'll have 11 more episodes plus some more to look forward to.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
See ya.